This is an Alliance podcast.
Hey, what's up? What's up? What do you do?
What do you do?
Hey, it's your girl Sky from the Southwest ATL. Where the players dwell. The fall at the Southern California Dome. With the beach to call in the wild, wild west with the homie. Tell the people who you are.
What's up? This is Sills from VA all day. Two up, two down. Repping the 804, the real P town. Now chilling with these big trees in the Pacific Northwest.
It's a lot of trees. And we are Shea Butter FC, a podcast featuring two Black women's perspectives on soccer, football, and everything in between.
Delivering content with soul and seasoning that'll moisturize your skin.
Lay your edges.
And deepen your love for all things Black women.
And wait, we got some special guests today.
Yeah.
We got to introduce the people.
We do. We've got the other podcast with us today, right? There's two. But we're really excited to be able to do this episode with them. And you can check out their episode for part one of this entire episode. It's going to be Diaspora United, and we've got Andre and Courtney. Y'all want to introduce yourselves?
Yeah, thank y'all for having us. This is fun. Like you said, we're only two podcasts you need, really, so you can just delete everything else in your feed and just have us, and you're good. You're covered for soccer. You don't need anything else. But yeah, I'm Andre. I'm one half of Diaspora United, and I'm here with my partner in crime, Courtney. How you doing?
Hi, I'm Courtney. I do want to give a little shout out since you all talked about where you come from. I'm from the 973, that is northern New Jersey, and I have not moved anywhere. I'm literally still in New Jersey because pun dulce.
And dulce is new. Sorry. Awesome. Well, like we said, we're super excited to have y'all join us. You are our first guest, I think, officially. So get excited.
Ooh, love that.
So like we said, part one is going to be on the Diaspora United podcast, and we'll let them plug where you can find them in the end of the episode. But we're going to jump right into our delayed top 10. Because, some weeks are harder than others, but we do have rankings for our forwards and our strikers.
Finally.
We'll see how it goes. Y'all know. Y'all love to tell us what you think. That's for sure.
Yeah. Because some of these are surprises because, I'm just now seeing these rankings. But, yeah, we're all here collectively to discuss.
All right.
So, starting, who are our forwards in order?
All right. Forwards/playmakers is what we're going to call them that occasionally score. At 10, we have Marta.
Mm-hmm.
9, we have Stephanie Mayor. 8, we have Pernille Harder. 7, Lynn Williams. Mm-hmm. 6, please get well soon, Tobin Heath. 5, Delphine Cascarino. 4, Kristen Press. 3, I'm just going to say Diani because I still haven't gotten her first name down yet. 2, recent, though it hurts my heart, Champions League winner, Jenny Hermoso.
Baller.
And number one for me, one Francesca Kirby.
Wow, Fran Kirby taking the top spot.
I think this year, at the current moment,
WSL Player of the Year, newly minted.
Yes, thank you. So yes, I think as of right now, and we will revisit all of these lists at the end of the calendar year. So again, things can change. There are major tournaments ahead. But for right now, I think Fran Kirby is playing the most consistently at the forward position.
So what if Stephanie Mayor today puts up 5 goals in the upcoming?
It doesn't mean strikers. I didn't say forwards couldn't score. I just said that usually their first attribute.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Is playing, yeah.
I'm just making sure there's no bias here because as a Chelsea fan.
I mean, we have the strikers list, so I feel like no.
Sure. Okay. I think you're right, though.
Yeah, I think I'm right about Fran.
I'm surrounded by Chelsea fans.
You are. Yeah, that's also you true. Are. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
But I mean, but also to be fair, like, I think even non-Chelsea fans know that, like,
Yeah, Kirby's
legit. True.
She's legit. I mean, she's lived up to her potential this year. Let's just say that.
I'm so happy she's healthy.
Yes, that's the big part.
But yeah. She was so sick last year.
Very much so. So I look forward to seeing her play.
What do y'all think of these rankings of that you see in front of you? Would you move somebody? Is somebody missing?
Well, I don't know if anybody's well, I will say I was surprised that Sam Kerr didn't make it onto the list. And right. I'm wondering if that's like, is that big game situation, Sam Kerr taking away some points from her from making it to top 10?
To me, Sam Kerr is a striker. So we will touch on Sam Kerr momentarily.
Yeah, because there's a difference.
I did not forget her.
Because we had
to
a
me,
war.
There's a difference. Yeah.
There is a war. We had a war because it almost got hostile because people was about to be left off. So it was like, you got to have strikers versus forwards. That you got to have the separation.
But yeah, I think there's a difference between score first versus I'm willing to distribute. So, well, and sometimes people are both.
Well, I guess I am curious if you think of Dabinia as a forward or a striker.
I had Dabinia in the midfield. I think of Dabinia as an attacking midfielder, but yeah, you probably could have Dabinia as a striker. My favorite thing about Dabinia is that she will kick the, you know, she'll try to shoot from 30 feet. So I don't know. I think she's a ridiculous attacking midfielder.
Okay. Cause I was like, well, I kind of see her a little bit as, I know like she did play in the box, no, but I sometimes see her as like a forward. And so I was like, Dabinia.
Yeah.
But yeah, honestly, I think I agree with most of this. So, I don't know how I'd switch it around, but I'm gonna think about that.
Yeah, you can definitely come on our Twitter page and let us know why we're wrong. It's fine.
Right, right. So break down the strikers, because
mm-hmm. Okay. This is probably where we're gonna disagree. I am trying to be inclusive of the people. Whether
I see it, I find yeah.
Body of work. I was going body of work.
Okay, fine. It's fine. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. For 2020-2021. We'll see. I have 10, our favorite flopper. Oh, right. But she does score a lot of goals. 9, Lynn Williams, even though we've been in a bit of a drought. 8 is Cady Martinez. I feel like that was a fan sell. 7, Alexander Popp, who is also hurt. So I hope she gets well soon. Fran Kirby, who decided she was a striker this year. And put a lot of goals in the back of the net. 5, Marie Antoinette Katoto, who I think is about a millisecond from really clicking to her full powers. 4, the most accurate shooter, in my opinion, Kristen Press. 3, Vivian Miedema. 2, Sam Kerr. And 1, Khadija Bunny Shaw.
Ooh.
Yeah, I did it.
Ooh,
she's after what I here? Saw, after what I saw.
Ooh,
wait, who are we talking about?
You didn't put Alex Morgan on here
right now, 2020-2021. No, I did not.
They gonna come for you.
2020. Well, she didn't play in 2020. I don't know what I'm supposed to measure it by.
Okay, I see you out here.
Actually, that's true.
She was on the ESPN top.
Is she the best striker on her team right now?
Ooh,
that's a legitimate question.
For club or country or both?
Oh no, not for country. The best forward in for country is Kristen Press right now. But with the
clip, you're talking about
that clip. Was it 28 out of 29 games? Get out of here. Yeah, no.
You're talking about strikers versus forwards.
Let's see.
Because I think I probably would count Kristen Press more towards a forward than an out and out striker. But also when I think about strikers, I think about like you're almost pure, just full out number nines.
A Hegerberg or
but that's the issue though, because her team in Manchester United, literally there was no midfield. It was like Jackie Ronan.
No striker.
So you were asking her, because we got towards the end of the season and Casey Stoney's like, oh, well, she played a full game as a nine, and I was like, she played 10 and 9 at the same time. She went back and forth.
Like, I don't like her as an eye. But okay.
Yeah. I wouldn't
feel like we've evolved. We've evolved past the need for that. I think in its purest form, I'm thinking of a 9-2. And then I realized I couldn't think of 10 pure nines to put on the striker list, if I'm being really honest, because the game has changed. Even like Meetham is not a pure 9, right? Like Sam Kerr is not a pure 9. She plays out wide.
But to me, I still think of them
as goal scorers.
Yeah, but to me, I think they're closer to a 9 than like, or even like Ellen White. But to me, I think of them closer to a 9 than like, even Fran Kirby is. I don't necessarily see her as a 9. Sometimes I see Christian Press as a 9, other times I don't. And so, some drop.
All good. All good.
So yeah,
no,
I think
that's what we like.
That's probably the thing with this list is I feel like some of them, even though like, for example, for Fran Kirby just decided to turn up and start scoring goals this year. But some of them I see as like, for example, like Katoto is like, I think of a center forward, even if she does have different positions and like operates differently. I'm thinking about like, okay, when we're in the box, who are we really trying to get the ball to, even if it's not your out and out striker. And I feel like sometimes Fran Kirby is that, but at least on Chelsea squad for the most part, that could have been Sam Kerr, or even sometimes like Pernilla Harder, and like for Manchester City, or did Ellen White go to Everton this season or no? Was that
no? Jill Scott.
That was Jill Scott. Yeah. But like, for example, for Manchester City, like who do we want in the box right there? It's like Ellen White.
Well, that's why I think it's interesting is y'all, you know, like props to y'all making the list, because that's really hard to do. Like you said, football's evolving, and like there aren't that many. Like I'm trying to think in my head, how would I get a list of 10 who play 9 the way Ellen White does, who just kind of hangs out in the box? Like even Sam Kerr, even though that's where she scores the bulk, she's usually running into the box to get it, like to get those chances, or she's running diagonal across to get in front of a center back. She's not kind of that target player. So like, it's tough. It's real tough. So shout out to y'all, because I'd be shook.
Yeah.
Man, I ain't making it.
The game has changed, right? And I definitely agree, Courtney. And I think, again, we had a lot of back and forth because trying to make a list of just 10 forwards is really, it's really
very
hard.
Difficult.
Which is probably why we cheated a little bit. Let's split it up and see.
What about, is she on there? So no Bethany England?
Well,
ooh.
Yes, to me, Bethany England's an out and out striker, but we would have had to play Bethany England more for that to be.
Yeah.
Okay. I see the light.
I'm thinking, I don't want to talk about it right now because I don't think she's going to stay. But
no, she's not. She's
she's going on to play.
She wants
to higher levels, greater places.
I love Bethany England, though. I'm also a huge Ada Hegerberg fan, but of course she's hurt. So she could.
Bethany England, come to the NWSL.
Ooh.
I would love that.
I have some thoughts.
Come to the NWSL.
I heard Casey Stoney's coming, so she might try to finally get her.
And
I would go see it, Bethany England play, even if it was for Portland, but that's fine. So that's what we have, but the fans will let us know.
Yes. All right. So let's move on to the next. This is a conglomeration of rants and raves. But how y'all do it is spot kicks, saves, and zazas. Can y'all explain to the people how your segments typically goes?
Yeah, so the segment's called spot kicks, which is like basically another nickname for penalty kicks. And so you either have a goal, which is like what you think about someone scoring a penalty, which is like something that is good or great. You have a save, so think about a goalkeeper saving a penalty, like not necessarily like it's just like a pure save, which is like something's okay. It could be better, could be worse. And then you have something called the Zaza, which is what I will let Andre explain since he came up with the name.
So it's a men's player named Simone Zaza. And not to tell you to not listen to the podcast, but pause it, go to YouTube, type in Zaza, Z-A-Z-A penalty, and just watch it. Because I can't really do it justice. Basically, he did the slowest run up. He did these little baby steps for about 10 yards. And when he finally got to the ball, he just blasted it to the moon. So it's basically when something is just awful, pure awful.
It is genuinely one of, and it's funny because it's like he's taking his baby steps, but his knees are going up really high. It is absolutely insane.
It's the goofiest thing you've ever seen. Like, it is, nobody takes penalties like that, and that's why.
It is so goofy. It is it's genuinely so bad. And the fact that, and the funniest part about it was that, like, I was trying to psych out the keeper, and then, like, puts it, almost kicks it out of the stadium at this point. It's out to the moon to going to another country. It is absolutely terrible. But yeah, that is spot kicks, which is basically how we, similar to rants and raves, but it's just how we talk about, you know, greater storylines going on. And
Okay. So then let's talk about it. Like, the refereeing this week, we are now in the NW MMAL, the NW Rugby League. Like, it's no longer soccer. How are we feeling about the refereeing this week?
NWSL UFC.
Oh yeah.
It's consistently bad. It's been bad since the Challenge Cup, and I don't know how we fix it because there doesn't seem to be any accountability. And when you speak out against it, like Megan Klingenberg, you get fined. So I don't know what the answer is.
But we were talking about this actually last episode when Mitch just got trucked. Is that like a good word? Like, you just got trucked?
Yes.
And the ref, and of course everyone was like, what in the world? She got trucked by Jane Campbell. Jane Campbell did not receive, didn't even get a foul call. No yellow card, not even like potentially red card for literally this dangerous play. And when people asked about it on post game, like asked about the referee said that that she didn't deem it to be like she was like, the collision happened by nature. Like, it was like a terrible response. And to me, the worst part about this refereeing, even if it's like, okay, is this like, is this a foul or not? Or is it a borderline yellow card or red card? Like, I'm just concerned about player safety. And like, we've seen now what in two weeks in a row of players, specifically Black players, in really dangerous situations and like them just not being protected at all.
Yeah, I think I feel the same way. I mean, I've been the refereeing in the NWSL has always been bad, and that's true. But I also think that, like, just do the basic stuff. Like, just call the stuff that, like, very clearly is dangerous, and you'll improve the view of refereeing by a substantial percentage. Like, it's just frustrating that they won't even call the normal. So, like, Midge got trucked. That's just the, like, you as the referee, you have to at least set the tone that, like, when I'm on the pitch, you can't do that. Because when you don't call anything, that gives the opposite message that that is okay. And that's how players get hurt. So, like, it's just do the basic stuff, like, basically do your job. I think that's the answer to a lot of NWSL problems, do your job. But clearly with refereeing, it really is just, like, do the job, make the call.
So, stepping away from refereeing, and Julie Ertz got hurt a couple weeks ago. Well, last week. And she was the number six. So who is replacing Julie as she supposedly is rehabbing an MCL sprain? Who we got? Crystal?
That came as...
If they made Crystal play a third position, I'm going to be fighting people.
Well, that was like more like a joke of her kind of playing that position in Portland and just kind of being everywhere and nowhere. And we're like, nope, she's playing as a six right now. I was actually thinking about, well, so seeing how Portland was in the Challenge Cup, we actually saw Megan Klingenberg back in that position. And for a while I was like, why is Megan, like, did Megan Klingenberg retire from the national team? Googled it. She didn't.
She did not.
So I was like, that's
Jill.
To me,
she's retired.
So to me, that is an, especially seeing, for example, thinking about like Christy Mewis and seeing kind of players potentially like players that used to were on the national team coming back in the fold. I think that would be kind of interesting as like a person to kind of, you know, fill in that position, who isn't necessarily, to me, doesn't normally really play as a six, but also isn't like kind of the natural progression of like, oh, we're just going to move a center back up there.
Yeah. I think it's good.
Simple. Andy Sullivan.
Yeah. I mean, that would probably be who I would plug in. One, I think she's just as good a defender, very quietly. And two, I actually think she's better at springing the attack. So I've been rooting for Andy Sullivan to get a chance. I think she's a very complete midfielder. So I'm hoping she gets the call up and we get to see what that looks like.
Not Emily Sonnet. No. Stop it.
Oh, don't do that.
Not after her game at six.
No. Don't do it. Black go. Don't
Washington even. Didn't even finish follow through with that. They took her out after halftime. So
don't do it.
No.
No. I don't need Becky yelling. I don't need Abby yelling. No. Don't do it.
I do think that, like, on a club level, there's a potential it can work in the right system, but not the U.S. Women's National Team system.
Thank you. No. Hallelujah.
This is a golden age of midfielders. I just feel like you have other options. So I thought, and I don't know how she would work centrally. I even thought Sam could potentially do that. She's a good enough defender to play that position. And she's Sam Lewis, so like the chances of her falling to the ground are slim to none. So
well, that, and I feel like she low-key already kind of does that, where she just kind of marches in and just breaks up play, and now it's just so.
I love watching Sam Lewis take the ball off people because it's just disrespectful. Like, and she's not mean. She doesn't have a mean bone in her body. Like, she's just like, oh, just gonna take it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
It's hilarious.
Yeah, the one thing I got to figure out, for example, who one of these players, because back in the day, where instead of like now teams play a flat back four, when you used to play a sweeper and a stopper sweeper, which is, I mean, honestly, that just progressed to a modern day six. Like, if I were still playing soccer, I would have been a six, because they were just like, just go, just be the destroyer. So, yeah, I think, but that, I don't know, to me, when Julie Ertz got hurt, everyone was like, oh, the Olympics. I was like, oh, we have so many midfielders, we don't actually, to me, have depth at that position.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you got to find a replacement for her. So,
right.
Or you just scheme differently, which we can do as well. So,
yeah.
We'll see.
All defense, no bad. Or no defense, all
vibes. All vibes.
Going to outscore the teams.
Yeah, that's what you got to do. You got the talent. Just go and score. Just go be great. Just go.
Yeah.
Go.
Absolutely.
Go. All right. So, Angel City hired a sporting director, Annie Aluko. I say it right.
You got it. Good job.
Hey, look at me out here. So what do we think? How do we feel it?
Well, also for the people who don't know, Annie Aluko is a former Chelsea player, England international, also played at Juventus. But she was recently sporting director at Aston Villa, who also, on a side note, has really shaken things up in the front office this offseason. But yeah, she's now the newest sporting director at Angel City.
Personal feelings aside, one, congratulations to a Black woman for getting a job that she's probably overly qualified for. So she has a law degree. She's, you know, she's, I think, got a master's in sports management. Like, she knows what she's doing. I assume that she's already sold whatever game plan she's going to have in terms of player recruitment. And putting a team together, and it was good enough for them to hire her. So, yeah, and it's interesting seeing which players are excited to see her come. Just maybe as a preview of what's going to happen at the end of the year. And everybody wants to go to Angel City. So, well, not everybody, but a lot of players want to go to Angel City. And so I don't think she'll have a hard time convincing them to play. I think who the coach is, and maybe her being hired is a hint of who that'll be. We'll play a big part in that as well. So it's not just her, but I think it's interesting. And Angel City is the first team to hire somebody who's out and out a sports manager, like officially. So what they're doing is different. So it'll be interesting to see. But overall, it's probably a good hire. I think she and I differ a lot on some of our views in life. But yeah.
Yeah, I don't necessarily have a lot of feelings about this because I feel like I need to do more. I like kind of know who Annie Aluko is and some of her opinions, but I don't necessarily know like all of them, even though I actually do have her book, which is my microphone is sitting on top of it. And I will say it's the thickest book with the largest print. Like, the font size is huge. side note. But I do think, like, thinking about, okay, we're a new NWSL team and we want to recruit world-class talent. And so having someone who has not only been at that level, but I'm assuming obviously she has so many connections that will work in our favor. But what I'm curious about, and I know Andre is probably going to speak about this, is like, for example, what culture you're trying to create at the club and how that aligns, for example, with the person's views.
Yeah, this one's complicated for me and can probably be, or not could probably be, could definitely be a whole podcast. So I might have to get into it more later when there's the space. But I agree with Syl. She does not have, we do not share the same politics and differ in a lot of things. Just based on stuff she said on Twitter, she's been against furlough assistance in the UK. She's been hyping up that racism report that they released in the UK that said like there's no racism. She had a comment about that, saying that it was like, you know, she didn't want, it creates like a culture negativity to keep talking about racism. And so like there are just some opinions that she has espoused. And to be fair to her, she has walked them back on most occasions, I believe. But it's the starting point that is a bit concerning to me. Putting that aside, I think it's good that she has that job. I don't know how instructive she was in bringing like Mana Iwabuchi to Aston Villa, but that's a signing that could have been at any top club. And in fact, Iwabuchi is going to end up being at Arsenal now that she's gone. So like that's the caliber of player that she got to Aston Villa, who had just gotten promoted the previous season. So I think that if she's had something to do with that, she clearly has a lot of connections, not only in England, got to believe in Italy as well. She played for Juventus. So she's got a lot of connections to Europe. She's a very recognizable name and face and a terrific player as well when she's playing for Chelsea. So like on those merits, I think this will be very interesting, especially if ACFC seems like they want to be a global club. But, you know, you're always going to get in that weird balance, right, where you're trying to be both a like socially conscious club and win at all costs. There are going to be compromises. And I'm saying that I'm not saying any Luco is like Ben Shapiro. So it ain't on that level, but it's like, I just hope that they did all those internal discussions and they understand like everybody's cool with it. Cause I know a few people that work there and I just want to make sure that everybody's safe and that work environment is safe. Mm-hmm. And I don't think she's going to like tear that up. I just hope they're having the right conversations.
Yeah. That's what I think about when, like, past the, first of all, like the outlook of it, like obviously appointing a Black woman is going to look great, honestly, for most soccer clubs, just because very few and far between, especially here in the United, well, truly around the world, but especially here in the United States. But yeah, I think about, especially with their opinions, club culture and like, what, like, you know, what type of club culture are you creating, especially if you do want to be, you know, a progressive club, especially in a place like to me, like Los Angeles. So, and I mean, I know of people who work there. I don't know them necessarily personally, but you know, what is the culture that it creates for the club, but, and not even just the players, but like, you know, the front office staff.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't. And you're in LA, that Lord. Yeah. This is going to be interesting because racism in LA, ooh-wee, well, it's going to get real, real, particularly since they're really adamant about trying to integrate with the community. And like from the jump, people are like, if you're going to be an NWSL club and you're serious, you're going to have to like reach out to the Black and Brown communities, because that ain't even happening as much as it should on the MLS side. So when you have that kind of like direct thing happening, even in terms of supporter groups, some stuff that's happened, like you're like, yeah, she gonna have to pull it together, but we'll see what happens in the future. So
might learn a few things.
She might learn. Yeah, it's gonna be a learning experience for everybody. I guess the last thing before we get to some raves and rants directly, the commentator situation that's happening in these broadcasts. Have y'all been paced and powered enough? Did you feel your triple P's this weekend? Pace, power, and precision. We got the whole homegirl. She came through, y'all. She got the pace, power, position for the white players. And then the athletic stylings, the athletic technique, that was a new one this week, yes, too. But how do we get better? So we're not talking about moms, the Olympics, the...
Butchering Naomi Osaka's name.
Oh, yeah. My God. What? Calling Crystal Dunn, Kristen Press. That was a fun one. Oh, yeah. First game. I was like, what?
There was a... that happened at another... I think it was actually between maybe Cujo and Anumanu. And I was like...
Yes, it did.
I was like, that? Mm-mm. No. I was like, no, they... do both have braids, but one is
height. It's a big height difference. And then I'm like, Crystal Dunn and Kristen Press could not look more.
Because she said pressing. Because she didn't say pace and power. So then she was pressing. And then she called her Kristen Press. And I was like, wait a minute now. Let's not.
I said, what the what?
Yeah. Yeah. How are we going to make it better? Because with Andre, you listen on mute, right? So it's like, how do we, like, what can it get better? Because they didn't even, I was expecting them to whip open the Wikipedia and just start reading stuff about their college years. You know, what does it take?
You know, I've had this problem kind of like, this is like a big, to me, like American soccer problem. Just the way that we do broadcasts, period, for any sport, it's nonstop talking. Oh, and when you listen to like a lot of, it's particularly in England, you know, either you're quiet and you're letting the game breathe, or, you know, you can follow some of the like Liga MX Femenil announcers who, when they talk, they're talking about moments that are happening in the game and are excited about it. But American commentary is so critical, so cynical, that when they're talking, there's always a kind of need to showcase your intelligence instead of just appreciating the play that is happening in front of you. You know, the hope of what could happen, right? Like, ooh, that was really close. And then, like, you'll hear that, you know, you almost think it's a goal if you're watching Liga MX or something femenil, and you'll turn around and you're just like, oh, they hit the post or something like that. But in American commentary, if the same thing happens, they're like, oh, you got to be more clinical. And it's like, well, no, that was still a really great effort. Like, scored a goal is hard. Like, it's still like, so I think it's just it needs to be a whole culture shift. And I also really, really think that people have like, they're like, all right, let's just call her out. Kaylin Kyle is Miss Pace and Power, and this is just what she does.
Triple P.
And instead of her just straight up understanding that this is racist, it's got a lot of racist history, you're not going to fix it by yourself, and stop trying to go ahead and always think that like, I'm just going to use it for white players, so it's fine. Or now I'm going to add precision to it, so now it's fine. Or now I'm going to say like athletic technique or something. Like, she just pulls out all these random phrases to make it seem like she's not doing what she's doing because she was called out. It's like, get better at actually broadcasting. That's really all there is to it. Like, there are certain things that are just bad and not helpful things to say. When you say them, that's on you. And like, you, it's your job to communicate what is happening on the pitch in a much clearer way. And when you rely on these crutches, even, especially the ones steeped in racism, mm-hmm, you're not doing your job.
Well, and the one thing I also realized, especially thinking about just watching like non-American soccer, I did immediately realize, and it's, even though I will say, maybe it is mostly like whenever Kaylin Kyle's on a broadcast versus, I feel like the other ones maybe let it breathe a little bit more, but just truly how much American commentators talk. And it's like also not even necessarily the helpful thing, because it wouldn't bother me, for example, if the like, because, you know, you have that broadcast team and one of the people is a play-by-play and the other person is the color analyst. And, like, if you just had the play-by-play guy talking and, like, being like, and, you know, they pass ball to this or something like that, I'd be like, all right, I, like, kind of understand it. Like, to me, that's at least a little bit more helpful versus when it's just, like, talking, A, telling someone's Wikipedia page about where they went to college, but also, like, and I tweeted about this yesterday, like, they're saying stuff about them in college that also like isn't necessarily interesting or important. I was like, it'd be one thing, for example, like, you know, if Brianna Pinto wins the Herman Trophy, like that's a big deal. If they mention that over a broadcast, I'm like, okay, that's like, you know, something that's important. It's like a standout stat, something, versus they're just like, and oh, like literally last night, I can't remember which one it was, but someone was like, oh, it's a big showing for the Big Ten in the NWSL this game. And I was like, shut up. Like no one, like that is like, that's not actually helpful to anything. And also the one thing that I think is really, really missing and like something that they fill with talking is that they're not picking up the things that we can't see. Since, you know, we're being directed, like there's a director, there's a cameraman, we're only seeing part of the game. And I think about, for example, in other matches when they're like, oh, like, you know, so-and-so, like kind of actually in what you guys were talking about before with Bunny Shaw in the Bordeaux-Lyon match of, oh, Bunny Shaw just made an incredible run down the left wing. And it's like something that we didn't see. And it's like, oh, that's helpful to me. But just having a person talk and fill airspace. And I'm like, I don't need this. It's even why sometimes, for example, like during a match, if I need to go do something, like I can just turn on the commentary in my car because it's like, they're just going to keep talking and I'm not really going to miss anything because they're just going to keep talking and I don't have to like, you know, find a radio broadcast. But it's also that I would say 85% of it, of what they're telling us isn't actually helpful.
Oh, but then it's not even like what's happening on field either. Like, it's like this disconnect because it's like, because if I hear Midge made a bad pass again and it was a beautiful ball into the box.
First of all, let's talk about people who don't know soccer.
That's my issue. I think it's really interesting as you try to create a culture and grow a sport that you don't have people who are able to teach it, right? Like, I think part of why we started a podcast, right, is to try to actually explain this is how soccer works. I think one, just their ability to be able to follow the game is going to bring you fans and bring you interest. But also, like, that's the point, right? I don't necessarily think American broadcasting culture in general does a really good job of explaining a sport, right? I don't actually think most of the people who do the work know the sport. And that's because we're focused on, like, human interest. We're focused on the stories. Our idea of building a sport is very much about, oh, if they know a player, they'll come. And that's not true, but I'm like, also people might dislike what they're actually watching as long as they understand it. And some things can't be explained, right? Like offsides is different every game seemingly. God knows I don't want to explain VAR to people, but I just think that there's a lack of actual soccer knowledge,
right?
Or explaining formations and movements and the why. I'm a context person, right? So if you explain to me why people are doing something, I'm probably far more likely to figure it out. And soccer is a lot of problem solving, right? So for the problem solvers, it probably helps to explain it more. And also have your information correct, like not just what's happening on the field, but if you're going to do the human interest stuff, please be right and say names correctly and practice and use the right pronouns and things that you should be doing anyway.
Yeah. And I also, and the one thing that's also kind of interesting to me is that in, like, let's say England, Spain, France, Italy, there, I kind of realized that there's only so much that you can say. For example, like in the States for an NWSL team, there's only like so much you can really say about them because there's just so few games and like just an overall lack of cup competitions versus in England with the WSL or the Premier League or with France with Dio and Arkema or Ligue 1, like, you can also talk about, for example, like, oh, here's how they're doing in the Champions League or here's how they're doing in their League Cup or something that like not only adds more context, but also is a lot less of like, here, let me come tell you about Diani's life story, which just like doesn't, like you're not getting that. And so they're trying to fill airtime, which for me, it's like, okay, most of these, especially these like color commentators are like former players. It's like, I don't know, add something, like, not necessarily talking about, because I have seen also the flip side of that, of, like, I just love so-and-so, or they're so blah, 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 like, they're so incredible, or, like, they're, like, that's also not helpful. But I'm, like, I don't know. For me, I particularly laugh when, like, Lee Dixon, for example, is, like, foul throws, because I feel like there were a lot of foul throws for, like, a month. Them saying, you know, this would have like fined me like a week's worth of wages. I don't know, like something else that's like interesting, but it's also just not like fluff.
Right, right.
Did we lose ourselves?
Wait, hold up. So.
Oh. Sorry.
So speaking of commentating, well, actually from a social media perspective, I guess the raves and rants this week are directed at social media, either doing it the right way or the wrong way. So, I mean, are we
trying to... As an educator, I'm like, we have examples.
do we talk about the Portland situation first, or it ended on a high note with the what's happening at Gotham, or how do we want to go about this? Like, how many times?
Y'all's pod, y'all decide.
So I think it's the difference between actually listening to your audience versus not, right? Like, I think maybe the biggest thing with the Portland situation is, like, people were giving you legitimate feedback and constructive criticism and really taking the time that they did not have to explain the why. Oh, why something was problematic. And it just seemed really to be dismissed. And I think, honestly, since that moment, it's been a pretty solid series of L's, right? Like, so I believe that tweet came this weekend based on people asking for information about where they could watch the Portland match, right? So this is someone asking to watch the team that you run a social media account for. They're asking to watch them, right? Like, that's a new audience member, and I would be very eager as much as possible to accommodate that. That's me. And I don't necessarily think it was handled that way. And I think you do, comedy's always hard, right? Like, if you're trying to be funny, everyone has a different sense of humor. So if that's the angle you're going for, be it like self-deprecating or snarky or whatever, that's going to miss a lot of people. And particularly when they're just simply trying to get information, whether they're completely in the right or not, like, the first thing I'm going to do is like, okay, I want this person to watch this team. It's a very good product. They're very good players. I'm going to try to answer their question. I think outside of that, it's not going to be for everybody, no matter how you run a social media account. Not everyone's going to like it. But I think particularly in a league where you have other people doing it differently, and I think better, it's worth taking a look around. And I understand wanting to put your own sort of stamp and, you know, attitude and spin on things, but it's pretty consistent, and it's your own fans who are questioning you. I think that's also a big red flag. So I would maybe take the critique and sit with it for a minute.
Yeah. And I think for me, it's also the difference between like punching up versus punching down, of like one of like fans being like, hey, it's not. And I mean, it is when a game's on CBS Sports Network, like, it just kind of throws the entire system of like, oh, I'm going to watch on Twitch tonight, or I'm going to watch on Paramount Plus or something. Like, it just kind of throws it all like into the wind, because all of a sudden the game's on cable TV, versus on the flip side with like Gotham, for example, whose social media just makes me cackle regularly, like the memes, the jokes. But we also know, I mean, we read in part one of like Meg Rapinoe just butchering purposefully or not Gotham's new name, and Gotham tweeting back and being like, and like kind of playing on the same joke. But it's like, not saying that necessarily Megan Rapinoe is like punching up, but it's not like punching down on your fans or people who are trying or like coming to you for a certain reason. And even with, you know, Orlando Pride kind of posting that, I can't remember, oh, it's like, this is a real football team or something like that. Like, there is, to me, a very different. And like, if you are, you can still be snarky and playful and all that stuff, but it's really different of who you're directing it at. And there's a big difference between directing it at fans who are just kind of out and out living their lives, versus like, oh, it's another team or it's another coach or something like that.
Right. Because even with Orlando, they like came through and posted after that comment was made after the game by Paul Riley. They posted where earlier in the day, North Carolina had the calm before the storm in a picture. And then the storm, it was like this storm that they didn't put the Orlando Pride thing, like, this was a storm, and it was funny when they could have did something totally different. So yeah.
Yeah, I think my thing is with social media, particularly up in Portland and what's going on, like, you know, especially with that particular instance, that's been going on since the Challenge Cup. You know, the CBS Sports Network thing's been annoying for a number of us. Like, I remember I have access to all the channels and I'm kind of fortunate too, but I didn't know where to find the match. I was like, what do you mean it's on? It's not, I can't just go to Paramount Plus and watch that. But nah, apparently you need to go to actual like cable and find a way to get on CBS Sports Network. So yeah, like letting people know that's how you can watch the team that their account that they're interacting with is kind of important. And that's kind of my problem with what's going on in Portland. It's not, it doesn't come across as the Portland Thorns media account. It comes across as the person who is running the Portland Thorns media account. And that is not a good line to cross. They tend to want to be like the funniest person in the room or always have the snarky comeback. And it's like, nah, you're a team tweeting. And sometimes you're going to have, like, I know a few people who run team accounts. Sometimes you're going to have to field an annoying question and you're going to get it 100 times. Your job is to do, the job is to respond. And then, yeah, the other job is to respond as the team. You know, like you guys said, Orlando's done a great job. Gotham's done a great job protecting the team, hyping up the team, talking about the team. And it seems like that's not how the Thorns Twitter account is used. And that's really unfortunate. And it really kind of paints the whole club as like I said, they've got a handful of redeeming qualities at that club. And it ain't anybody in the front office or seemingly anybody they end up hiring to do their social media.
And I think to your point too, Andre, like I agree with that. So not only does it not come off as a team account, but puts some of the pressure on the team. That team already has a target on its back, right? Like yeah. Everyone's picked Portland, right? So it doesn't particularly endear them, but also you're not going full villain, right? Like at least if you were going to lean fully into villainy, then that would make more sense. Like it's like when LeBron finally embraced being a villain, right? Like do it that way then. Because if not, you're sort of just living in this in between. And it doesn't work. It's a lose-lose situation. So yeah.
So all right. So we've ranted and raved. So it's for our last segment. Let's get into some hits and riffs where we're gonna talk about our favorite music from yesterday and today. That Quiet Storm, you know, that slow jam vibe, that Quiet Storm after dark, after 9 p.m. Man, I might be too old. Y'all might not know what that is. Or the turn up where you get lit. And being that we're old, me and Silver, geriatric millennials.
I rebuke that title.
Okay, fine then. I'm millennial. Actually, you are more so geriatric than me. I am.
Wow. I deal with this every week.
I'm playing, y'all. Y'all know I'm seasoned. I got a new one. I'm rotisserie. I'm marinated. Oh, marinated. I said that to my mentor. I almost got cussed out. But anyway, it's all good. Let's see. So everybody's gonna drop their 4 songs of the week. I guess I'll start it off. So let me see, for my yesterday jams, my Quiet Storm, is it really, I guess it is, yeah, it is. It's Maxwell's Luxury Cocoa Cure. That's my jam. I love me some Maxwell. My turn up is The Great. I mean, she did TLC wrong, but Pebbles and the Mercedes, Pebbles is fine. But anyway, Mercedes Boy, that was my song. You know, I was up there like, in the Mercedes. And then yeah, my today jams, my Quiet Storm, Daily, Time Travel. You should check out his albums if you haven't. And then my other turn up is the light skinned brother Logic and Under Pressure. That's my lituation. I got several Logic songs, but that was the one. I was gonna do the other light skinned brother Drake, but I can't find his mixtapes on the Spotify, so we're gonna let it go.
All right, so it's always going to be wheelchair Jimmy to me. Sorry.
Did you see Adonis with his cornrows?
Oh, yeah. He ran away.
He wanted to leave the stage. Poor baby.
Why you bring up wheelchair Jimmy to the Drake?
Because that's the first time I met the man. It was Degrassi.
But, so. I mean, mixtape Drake is still undefeated, man. With Trey songs? It has been a
moment. Sugar Trey, yeah. yeah. So I guess I will go next. So my, and forgive the wind, it's windy here. My old school or Quiet Storm jam is All Cried Out, but the cover by Allure featuring 112. And then fun fact, Allure was a group found by Mariah Carey. So of course they were going to be able to sing. So, and then my yesterday turn up, truly one of my favorite club ones, is Damn by Young Bloods and Lil Jon. So shout out to the ATL for that masterpiece. I had a lot of very good memories. The ones I can remember to that song. And then let's see, my today's Quiet Storm. And again, y'all know when I say today, I mean the last like decade or so. So my today Quiet Storm is Adorn by Miguel. Miguel is great. Listen to every album. Man, is super talented. And then my today turn up, and I didn't realize we'd have a Jersey guest, but We Are Young, the Jersey Club remix.
I love Jersey Club remixes. Oh, they're fantastic.
They're the best. They're the best. So yeah, check that out. It's by Kyle Edwards and DJ Smalls, but I love me some Baltimore House and some Jersey Club and a few other things that I got turned on to in college. So yeah, those are my picks.
Yeah, so even though everybody's kind of like been calling out geriatric millennials, I'm probably the most geriatric of the millennials here in the Zoom. So mine are really all going to be exactly, mine are all going to be kind of throwbacks with the exception of one. So I'm just going, when I say yesterday, I'm going way back to like before I was alive. Okay. So I ain't going to give y'all any more hints than that. But my yesterday Quiet Storm as by Stevie Wonder.
That's an incredible amazing song.
Amazing song. Just go listen to it. Yesterday Turn Up, going with Stevie Wonder again. Skeletons. That song is great. Find the 12-inch version too, because actually Stevie dropped some real political stuff in there in the middle of it. So make sure y'all like, I don't know. This is a little bit of a rant too. I think some people that are like older Black artists, people think that they just kind of like stayed in their lane. No, they didn't. That's just what y'all think. Go read about them. Go understand them. Stevie Wonder, absolutely good politics, good dude. Incredible musician, obviously. In fact, shout out to Bomani Jones' podcast. Him and Spencer Hall talked about Stevie Wonder recently. If you ever want to see a country dude like Spencer Hall, Google Spencer Hall. He'd be on SportsCenter in overalls, white dude with a massive hillbilly beard. But that dude knows music, and he broke down Stevie in like an incredible way. That dude is incredible. I'm in awe of that dude. So check that out. Today's Quiet Storm. I'm doing today in air quotes because I got Tina Marie, Lover Girl. Listen to that. Love me some Tina Marie. And then this is as today as I get. My turn up, DNA by Kendrick Lamar. I shouldn't say what was in the chat, but I think so too, but we're gonna leave that alone.
He says it all the time. It's hilarious.
I was waiting for him to say it the entire podcast, but he never said it. But I was like,
he didn't say it.
Come on, man.
Now y'all know. Now y'all know.
Stay true.
Now y'all know. There's no way.
I don't think he can, but he's
not with them struggle locks.
That's my thing. That's my thing.
Oh gosh. Oh no.
Oh, boy. Poor Steve.
He's the goat, man.
I love me some Stevie Wonder. When I was, I'll say my nephews, when I was in college, I took a class with the legendary professor named Claudrina Harold, and it was called From Motown to Hip Hop. And it was just like basically my dream, because we talk about Black music every day and I wrote papers and stuff on it. So for me, since I am not the geriatric millennial of the group, I am literally right on the cusp of Gen Z.
We didn't need those specifics.
Even though I'm very much not Gen Z, because I have a cousin who is 2 years younger than me, looks at the world so differently. And I'm like, nope, I am, compared to you, I'm a full grandmother. So my Quiet Storm, and it's because this, like, I've been hearing songs I used to listen to when I was younger, but like kind of, and they kind of like unlock memories to me. So the first one for Quiet Storm is Come Close by Common. I loved that song as a child, singing my heart out like I wanted to get married as like a 9-year-old. It's like, why? And then my yesterday turn up is I'm Every Woman by Whitney Houston. I've been listening to truly so much Whitney Houston, really since the start of lockdown. But I like literally had a very funny tweet about Spotify being like trying to make me all these beautiful playlists, and I just listened to the same like 40 songs by Whitney Houston. My quiet storm for today is Heartbreak Anniversary by Giveon. It is beautiful. He has the most buttery silk deep voice. But the song is also low-key heartbreaking, which is why I love it. And then my today turn up is Kiss Me More featuring SZA by Doja Cat. Doja Cat, a contentious figure, but makes bops, unfortunately.
I've heard a few. She does. I've heard of her in passing, but yes.
In racial chat room showing feet.
As a person.
Oh, Noriega, never leave us.
As a person, Doja Cat, not a fan, but her music, and I'm like, this is my daily struggle. Her music, Kiss Me More, is a look. Summer, just outside when it's warm, hear this song, going to another level.
Yeah,
that's fair.
We have problematic artists on the playlist at the Shea Butter. We know. Yeah. If it makes you bop, it can go. I mean, at some point, there's going to be a Chris Brown on here. I'm trying.
Well, that's hard for me, but you do you.
Yeah. I mean, I've avoided T.I., but we won't go there. But anyway, we're going to wrap this on up. So, Diaspora United, tell the people where we can find y'all on the interwebs and everywhere.
Yes, you can find us at Diaspora UTDPOD on Twitter and Instagram. And then you can follow me on Twitter at Courtney Stith. Andre, you want to plug your Twitter account?
Yeah, I'm at @not_Carlisle.
Word, for sure. All right. So yeah, that's this week's episode. Next week, we'll talk about Tigers win the W.
One nothing right now. Put it out there.
It is 1-0. Oh, my bad. Lifelong Chivas fans upset. But
lifelong Chivas fans struggling already.
But the Tigers is out here. Yeah, Stephanie Mayor. Bald. And it's kicked a beautiful goal, by the way. But we'll talk about that. And I probably end up in cell when chaos happens this week. You know, we're 2 days away from typical chaos. And then a hybrid list in our top 10. That's going to be cause problems.
Yeah.
And then.
Should be next week.
Yeah, should be next week. And then whatever else. But yeah, that's basically it for today. So thank you, Diaspora United, for kicking it with us. And then let's get out of here. So stay hydrated.
Stay melanated.
Make sure the Black women in your life celebrate it.
And make sure your Shea Butter bombs are always elevated.
And y'all have a blessed week and stay fresh. Peace.
Peace out, everybody. Go Tigres.
Yay.
Necessary.